Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Psychology of Work, Why People Do What They Do, a podcast exploring the science and stories behind high-cohesion, high-performing teams. My name is Dr. Bobbi Wegner. I'm a lecturer at Harvard in organizational psychology and the founder of Groups. In each episode, we dive into the minds of industry experts to uncover what drives team and individual dynamics, tackle real-world challenges together, and share actionable insights to help teams feel and function their best. Thanks so much for joining, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here today. Today on The Psychology of Work, I'm joined by Dr. Amy Campbell. She's a chief people officer at Overhaul, whose career bridges two different worlds, which I get and I love, mental health and corporate leadership. With a PhD in counseling and clinical supervision, Amy began her career in the mental health and education space before moving into the fast-paced world of global startup, where she built the people function of Overhaul from the ground up. So she was really there from the beginning and saw this people function build out and built this out. And it was such a fun story for me to hear. Amy and I first met in Austin when I was speaking at HRA 25. She came to my talk, and the next day we end up having an extended coffee by the pool. It was a kind of conversation that just kept going because there were so many parallels in our backgrounds and perspectives. She's really an operator with deep expertise in human functioning and psychology, which is really a true superpower in business. And we both share a passion for blending that human insight with practical leadership strategy, championing human-centered leadership environments where pressure and pace can often push it aside to the detriment of the company. But Amy doesn't do that. You know, she understands that when leaders underappreciate how psychology in business is a superpower, it can really charge growth, performance, and speed. And Amy is really kind of sees the world from this perspective. So, Amy, what should I add here? You've just had such an impressive background. I would love to hear, in your own words, kind of your story.
Yeah. So first, thank you for that intro. And thank you so much for having me. I love that prior conversation that we had. So I'm excited to talk again. I definitely have an atypical HR career story, I feel like. I am a chief people officer, but my deepest roots definitely are in the mental health and education space. So prior to my last decade in the software space and tech leadership, I really held just leadership roles in the mental health world. I was a counselor. I've trained other counselors. I taught graduate courses in mental health and cultural diversity. And I built a lot of mental health programs from the ground up. So I'd say my deepest roots really are in the mental health space. I never thought in a million years, honestly, I would end up in the software and supply chain space. But it has been an amazing journey. An amazing story. And it's been really exciting to be a part of building a corporation from the ground up. And I think standout point is something that you said, essentially. And I firmly believe that you can have the best product and revenue strategy in the world, but if you don't have people who feel supported and are aligned and engaged, you just will not succeed as a company. So the people are so, so important to success.
Yeah, 1000%. I always think of the metaphor of like, you can have sort of like the machine of whatever you're doing, what are the strategies and the processes and all of that, but the people are, it's like the oil that makes the machine work. And if you don't actually have that people part right, the machine doesn't run. Right. So there's this, and psychology fits in really well there to be able to understand that dimension.
Yes, absolutely. I feel like 100%. I agree. I feel like psychology is really the core area of study of so many things that come into play in the corporate world. I feel like the list just goes on and on. But if you think about like human motivation and behavior and understanding that, conflict resolution, the importance of meaning and purpose and engagement and active listening and do no harm. The list just goes on and on around the areas that the corporate world could really benefit from building of a foundation of psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think with psychology too, it understands these concepts. So, you know, I always kind of joke that people, well, you know, think of psychology as sort of like a soft science, or is this emotion or whatever it is? And it is, but psychology, what it does is actually operationalize all of this. So you can put labels on these things so you can actually execute and activate on it. So yeah. Like, sure, you're naming the dimensions, but it also operationalizes it, which actually allows you then to make it part of a strategy and make it strategic.
Yeah, absolutely. And like using evidence-based methods to build businesses.
Exactly. So I didn't even ask you, or I'd love to hear more, but like, what is Overhaul? You know, like, what is the story there? What type of company is this? And, you know, yeah. How big are you? Where are you on the, you know, business front?
Yes. So I'll start with, we started as a team of 5 people, and we started about a decade ago. We are a supply chain integrity and security and risk management company, a software company. So we started with 5 people, and over the last 10 years, the company has just grown exponentially. We have employees all over the globe. We have 700, just under 700 employees, and we have 4 office spaces around the globe. So we've grown quite a bit, and it's been amazing also to stand up the different locations and different employee bases in different geographic regions. So that's been amazing too. As many companies did during the COVID pandemic, we went from a fully in-office working environment to hybrid and virtual and some in offices. But yeah, we've grown quite a bit. It's been amazing to be part of that journey.
Wow. Yeah, just to be, you know, the part of the first 5 people and then see the company grow to 700 and then go through all those changes. So there's this sort of hyper growth thing. There's global growth. There's a transition, never mind just navigating the global pandemic, but also like, what does this look like moving from a logistics company from, you know, kind of in office to a remote virtual space. It's just like, there's so many things as a people officer to manage there that you are the one really thinking and strategizing, which is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, what was one of the biggest surprises in that shift going really from like mental health and education to really a tech startup, and not just going to it, integrating, you're building this, you know, and it's like this part of it for me, I really identified with. I never planned on being like an entrepreneur, really. I guess when I look back, I'm like, well, I guess I was always an entrepreneur. I always had my own private practice. I wrote a book, did all those things. I never really worked for anyone else, I guess, except for Harvard. But even that doesn't feel like that's not typical, you know, like not a typical hierarchy, I guess, in that way. I'm still kind of on my own. So anyway, just moving, I like from the mental health space much more into building a tech company. Like, what was that shift like? How to challenge your own ideas about leadership and kind of how people operate. What came up for you in that?
Yeah, I think 2 things come to mind. One is that piece of there are so many opportunities for the 2 different spaces to learn from each other. I think when I initially came into the company, you know, I have this human development and like psychology roots. So one of the first things that I really wanted us to focus on is like, what is our culture going to look like? And so I wrote a commitment around that. And it was really based in those things that I was just talking about with psychology, like what we know about people. So not based in like business jargon, but what do people really need to succeed? And it was amazing at the time to just see how that was different for the space, to really think about, okay, what do people need? And let's not focus on revenue or some of like the catchy phrases that you sometimes see out there floating around in the business world. Really think about what people need and build the foundation from there. So I think that's one big thing, is just all of the opportunities for psychology and organizational psychology and what we know about people, and really building the foundation from there. And just so many opportunities where they could benefit from each other. But in this space, I think taking from the psychology world to build in the corporate world is just something that I saw pretty immediately. And then I think another one, just personal, is I am definitely a mental health professional at heart, and I know all about stress management and burnout. And oh my goodness, did I burn myself out and have to relearn some things that I thought I actually knew best. It has been an incredibly rewarding journey and like such an honor to be a part of this. And it's also incredibly exhausting to build a company from the ground up. Like I said, we were a team of five people when we started the company. And over the last 10 years, we grew exponentially. We did complex mergers and acquisitions. We went through the global pandemic. There's all those daily things that come up too. And then you also have the human side of life where leaders deal with those things like illnesses and losses and all of those human elements. So I really, really had to relearn a lot of things. And I think one major takeaway was I am the CPO of Overhaul, but I am also the CEO of myself. And every time I'm making a withdrawal without making some sort of deposit, I'm really contributing to being less effective at both of my executive roles. So definitely had to relearn some things around that. It's such an honor to be a leader, but also it's really difficult too. We're all human.
Yeah, there's so much of that I identify with and wrestle with, like as we're building our own culture groups and knowing that I have the capacity to go kind of hard, right? Like on myself, more than like more than anyone. I think everyone else I'm actually quite soft on. But it's like, you know, this which maybe is something I need to work on. But in my mind I'm always wrestling with, well, it's startup, you know, like this isn't gonna happen if someone's not doing this, and you know, I want this to work, so I have to do these things. Yeah. But then, how do you think about like burnout and I, at least what it feels to me at this point, and how I reconcile this rationally is that it brings me so much energy that it feels fueling. So, you know, it I want to get in, like, I'm really excited to build out. I was just telling you about, we're doing these design partnership things. I have to build out a one pager for that. I'm like really excited to get in and do that. You know, it's like a dumb thing, probably be a task for someone else, but I see it as like possibility, opportunity. What are we going to build? Who are we going to build it with? We already have some interests. Like, what words are we going to put to this? How do we, you know, but that's also at the cost of me not going for a bike ride with my daughter or going down to the beach to swim or to, you know, maybe do other things that are probably more balanced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the blessings, right? Like I feel so fortunate to have this journey, but it, like in everything, there are the things that you have to be mindful of in that journey too.
Yeah, and play the long game too, I guess, for myself around this is, okay, hopefully groups is around for many, many years and has this sort of legacy in its own right. But like there's a finite time with, you know, the people that I'm around now, you know, a couple of years, my son's going to college. Like, how can I have an acute awareness and consciousness of where we are in real time in the context of building a startup?
Yes, and I don't absolutely know what the reason is. That consciousness is so important.
Yeah. Well, you talked about really building the company by sort of looking at the human needs. So I was curious, like, what are those human needs? And then you also talked about your own sort of experience as an executive and knowing and having to relearn some things. What did you relearn, or what are the things that you prioritize probably in yourself, but also in others, or in like building a culture?
Yeah. I mean, my mind goes to a few things. I think in thinking about those pieces and building a culture, like I also want to be very conscious of what I'm modeling as a leader. And honestly, I can so much relate to just like the excitement pieces. I think what I had to relearn is I can move really fast and I am very ambitious and I love to learn. But I think just like starting small and remembering I can breathe and pause before I respond to this Slack message or respond to this email or speak up in this meeting. And I think it's so important to model that for the team as well. So I think like starting really small and prioritizing those things and relearning them was really helpful for me. And I also feel like our efficacy as leaders is directly correlated with our own grounding and our own connection to ourselves. So doing those little things that I needed to prioritize my like own grounding and connection to self made me a better leader overall. And I think that's true for all of us because we're all human. So I think it was prioritizing small things. And then also, I think as we talk about like the virtual world, really embracing for everyone, including our team members, if you're online, that doesn't always mean that you're available. And just taking the time to really, it's fast moving, but a breath takes 10 seconds and it can reground you, or taking a breath before you step into a meeting to ground yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this concept, and this very much comes from psychology, like thinking this like self is therapist, like idea, like you can't be an effective therapist if you don't have self-awareness and self-understanding, because as an example, like in the therapeutic world, you know this, but I'm sharing for people who are listening. Like when you're training as a clinician, you're using the feelings in the room as information. So if you're feeling anxious as a therapist, you're curious, am I anxious? Is the other person anxious and I'm picking up on it? Or is there something about our interaction that's creating anxiety? And how can I actually put words to it to say, is this helping the therapeutic relationship to help the person accomplish their goals? Or is this actually getting in the way of doing the work? And so we actually built a whole series of groups called Self as Leader and just took those concepts and applied to leadership training. So you can't be a good leader if you don't understand yourself, because in you it's hard to read the signals. So what are your common thoughts? What are your common feelings? What are your common behaviors? Do those things bring you closer to building a cohesive, high-performing team and to the goals that you've set, or do they take you away? And I think a lot of that has to do with stress management and burnout and all that. And I could just identify with what you're saying. I move quickly too. And when I get something to do, I'm like, I got to get this done. And so one strategy that I'm just playing with in recent time, but it's been really helpful, is just using AI, like, because I'm on it all the time anyway, just like dumping all the things I have to do in it. And it helps me prioritize in real time to be like, all right, what do I really have to do here? And, you know, helping it understand what I think is top priority. And then it's just easier than using a separate app or using, you know, a notebook or my calendar, or it's just like sitting there. So that's just helping me more stay focused on like what I really have to do, and then like parking the things that I feel like I have to do, but I don't actually really have to do today. It might be a tomorrow thing.
Yep. The prioritization. And I think as we talk about human-centered leadership, it really, those things are so rooted in connection, humanity, and accountability, which starts with ourselves, right? But if we think about that and working with leaders, there are a lot of really human reasons why that doesn't happen. It's sometimes fear, self-protection, or even just like a lack of training or a lack of understanding. Mm-hmm. So I think I see a lot of leaders who, when they get in that space and like lose that connection to self, they get in a space of like applying prescriptive and maybe even like performative one size fits all solutions. Mm-hmm. I just really believe that leadership frequently requires almost an uncomfortable level of us stepping into our own vulnerability and humanity. But unfortunately, I think what happens a lot is there is an environment that gets created from maybe that fearful place or just fast paced, so many things going on that it creates an environment of like transaction versus relation with each other.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think a lot of that is then we become reactive. And I think what you're talking about is when you're trying to apply a different framework than one that's your own. And it doesn't mean like leaders just operate. And it's like you have to take the time to figure out how your leadership fits in the context of the company you're working. So that's why alignment really matters, right? If there's like really opposing value sets, you're probably not at the right company. But you have to come up with a way to like understand how the company's values and your values are in alignment. And then how do you build a leadership roadmap that allows you to execute on the business goals through those value sets? Because now you're not guessing, you're not reacting to, you're actually operating from an internally led, self-led place, right? Versus being like, what should I be doing? Which then is often, it doesn't work because there's not a true alignment. It's not authentic. It's reactive.
Yeah.
The alignment, and it's slower.
Yeah, this is so true. The alignment around those values is so important. And even if there isn't that alignment, going into those conversations with leaders and having curiosity, I feel like is so important as well. Asking those questions to understand what are the blockers? Where is this coming from? So as someone who is guiding leaders, I really want to understand those things and really coming, this is back to psychology too, like coming from a place of unconditional positive regard for them and just entering those conversations with curiosity. And then I also think that's important because it models for them too, the way that they are working with their direct reports and their employees. So I think what happens in those conversations a lot is we're able to get to a place where we can come up with some really practical things to try with our teams that still honors their own like authenticity while they're, I like to say, experimenting a lot with leaders. Like we can just experiment and see how this goes. So helping them experiment with a new approach. And sometimes I'll work with them down to the very details so they feel really safe, because I think fear is a big blocker in leadership. So working with them down to the details of how are you going to start this conversation? What will you do if? But yeah, I like the experiment verbiage seems to work pretty well with leaders, and it relieves the pressure too.
Oh yeah, I love that. Well, we know what I see with a lot of the companies we work with, like people appreciate in theory, they're like, yeah, of course we want a culture of fallibility or a culture that take risks or a culture that innovates and a culture that can like sort of, you know, try things and pivot. But the reality is when you don't actually set up the relationship, no one's going to do that because they're scared. There's a fearfulness. There's not that psychological safety, which means just your ability to like take a risk and fail and not be penalized for it, you know? And I think organizations do that inadvertently because they don't know an alternative. I was just running a workshop for there were global advocacy leaders. So interesting people in like sort of big organizations advocating in different spaces, coming together, learning how to use coaching to be better leaders. And what I like about this kind of coaching mentality that we're talking about and like the, what you clearly just do naturally is like the language part of it really matters, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you ask these questions when somebody makes a mistake? How do you assume best intention, which is what you were talking about, versus in your mind, you could be like, that was the dumbest thing I've ever, like, why would you ever do that? You might think that as a leader, but that's not going to actually change things. Now you're making the person scared and they're not going to share with you. Which then as a leader, you're leaving something on the table because you need information to actually make the change. So you got to create an environment where the person's willing to share. Coaching language is really helpful with this. Assuming best intention, you know, that decision made perfect sense to you when you made it. Help me understand how you got there. Did it work? Did it not work? You're creating space for them to kind of solve their own problems, which then is going to actually allow them to learn more deeply and actually do something different next time.
Yes, absolutely. There's so many golden nuggets in there, but I feel like there is a big difference in holding people accountable versus shaming them, right? Shaming gets nowhere. It's not going to do anything positive for the person or you are the company, but the accountability piece is part of human-centered leadership and just so important to those conversations.
Yeah. And this was a big part of the conversation yesterday, because I think sometimes people think of coaching as like always cheerleading, and mm-hmm. it actually allows you to talk about hard things in a direct way while preserving yeah. the relationship. You can yeah. say, listen, like, I know you're trying really hard here. You've tried all these things. The business, the company, the team really needs this. We're not, there's like not alignment. Like, let's solve this together.
Yeah.
Do you, you know, is this the right goal? And it allows a conversation to happen to truly come up with proper solutions that can be activated, rather than you just telling someone what to do and then they don't really buy in and then they're not going to do it, or they're going to feel frustrated, or you're going to feel frustrated, and it slows everything down.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's clear that you really use a strength-based approach to deepen workplace connection and performance and cohesion and all the things we're talking about. So how do you see that really influencing not just individual performance, but like really the culture of the company as a whole?
Yeah, to dig a little bit more into the strengths-based approach, I am pretty eclectic in the like foundations I'll pull from and frameworks, but I do love positive psychology and strength-based approaches, and that's also part of our culture code, because really they share a common goal, which is to foster well-being and resilience with teams and focus on strengths rather than like focusing solely on deficits. So I think positive psychology provides that great framework, while strengths-based approaches offer the like practical strategies for implementing the framework. There is so much evidence around this, around just how that supports people. There's evidence that people really do show up to work feeling less worried and stressed when this approach is taken with them. But then also companies are more profitable. So there's evidence that they're about 20% more profitable when they take these approaches. So I think like in a practical sense, it really also just sends the message, we care about who you actually are and what is important to you and how you work best. And you are not just a resource to us. So I love using the values and action assessment, the VIA, super short, but it's also fun. It's fun for employees to sometimes get surprises about what their own strengths are, but then we also talk about like the team's strengths as well. So those discussions end up being really fun for people, and it really does encourage for everyone across our company to kind of look a little deeper in people and really foster that sense of, we want to know who you really are and build an environment around that. And I think another cool thing about that, an impactful thing, is that my goal in that is that everybody knows each other's strengths. So I'm kind of doing the initiative and leading that, but the real work is what everybody else in the company is taking away from that and better understanding each other and how they're working together with each other. So impossible to kind of count the different actions that come out of that, but I know that there's a lot of like team alignment, work structure, all in that. And honestly, the activity is just fun for people. We normally do it, and we do it as like a guess who this is. Like, we'll pull up their strengths.
Ooh, that's fun.
And yeah, and it's really, really fun, actually. And it's something, when I first started doing this with the executive team, it probably was, I would say like 5 or 6 years ago. And we still talk about that session now. There were just so many like funny things that came out of that. But I think that's a big thing too, just like not forgetting to have fun and how impactful that can be in fostering connection with people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's so many things you said there that I'm like kind of that are gems. But one, yeah, if people are interested in positive psychology, Seligman's really like the guy who's like, you know, the sort of founder, a person who's done a lot of research if you want to explore more there. And then also this idea, like the strengths-based model, I use this in class. It's in my motivation class. It's the first kind of book I have them read, which is Strength Finders. And they take the assessment, Gallup Strength Finders, and just get, you know, a picture of what their strengths are. And then the first paper is really a reflection of like, all right, well, how is your current life or work circumstance mapped against your strengths? Where are their friction points? Where do you notice it? How, when you look through the lens of misalignment between strengths and what's asked, like what's coming up? We end up building out like a groups module around this. It's super, it's one of the like days people love in sort of group coaching, which is you turn to each other and say you were going and say, okay, you know, what do people notice in Amy is things that are real strengths in her. And just sort of unprompted, people are sharing about how you impact them, the strengths they see. And it sort of hits on these different human needs. One, just like being seen in that way, getting the feedback. People learn things about themselves that they didn't even really realize, you know, and just kind of and then are practicing also direct communication that's sort of more emotionally laden, but also professional. All of that is just so important in the workplace.
Yes. And I think one thing that comes to mind too is it's really paints a picture for people, especially like first joining the company because they haven't experienced the company, but you can group those strengths together, right? And for example, our team at Overhaul, number one strength by far is honesty. So that's a really good thing for people. Yeah, it's a good thing for people to know as they come into the company. And then kindness is another top five strength in our company. So
kindness. Oh, that's like also a great one.
Yeah. So it really does set the tone, I think, culturally of like, we're going levels deeper here and you really are not just a resource when you come into the company or you work at the company.
Yeah. And I imagine it makes hiring easier too. Like, so I always break it down because, you know, I think you and I and probably the people listening get this, they care and see the value of psychology in the workplace. But I always think of like, all right, well, who's the most grumpy CFO kind of person I know who just does not buy into this or does not care or doesn't get it? And I'm like, this all breaks down into like operational speed. And so if you can actually have clarity around these things, it allows you to hire more clearly, reduce churn and friction. You have clearer alignment around where you're going and how you operate. And it just makes things run more smoothly. And we can quantify that, right?
Yes.
And actually, this is, like, I didn't even tell you this part, but we're actually doing this already. And then the platform will help us do more of this. It is like we're doing a team assessment and then individual assessments. So everyone has a snapshot of who they are as an individual, their strengths, their communication styles. We have a team personality assessment. And then everybody gets a report that sort of lays out like where the points of alignment are, where the points of possible friction are, and then what do you do around it? And then we have the team talk about it and then talk about what are the team goals and the company goals. And it just allows people to normalize that it's okay to be different. There's strengths in that. Let's put this, you know, it doesn't have to be like group therapy. It's about like really putting it in the context of what are our shared goals here? You know, like what are we trying to accomplish and how is this style going to support it? And how is this style going to get in the way? And let's like problem solve together.
I love that. Yeah, it sounds very similar to what we're doing at Overhaul and what we do around that. And I agree. I think it is pretty easy to quantify. I remember talking to the CEO about like taking this approach and that 20% profitability, right? That's a pretty powerful statistic, but also that piece of employees coming less stressed and less worried to work, it's a retention play too, and an engagement play. Like they're going to be engaged in their work and focused on their work the less they come to work with, or the more they come to work with less stress and worry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this, I should get you to join one of our groups, like strategy calls one day, because as we're building out this platform, we're like, okay, exactly what are we measuring and delivering on? So we're allowing each team to upload their own unique productivity to draw more correlation between the cohesion of the team, which is doing all the things we're talking about, the alignment piece, with the unique productivity data of the team. But what I want to measure ultimately, which we're not doing yet, is really this is tied to, I mean, so it's definitely retention engagement, but also like health outcomes. So missed work days, medical problems, and that all has costs associated with it.
Yeah.
So, but we just have to help that sort of grumpy CFO that's, you know, living wherever they live, like, understand that this is a dollars impact, not just a feelings thing.
Yes, I feel like that's one of the big pieces of my work as a CPO, making all of those connections and finding a way. I admittedly speak a different language, I feel like, because I have that different background and those different roots, but finding a way to make those connections and all of the different languages in our company, it's just so critical. It also makes me think of when you said measuring, one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we did is I mentioned earlier that we created that culture code, or I created that culture code for the company that was really based on evidence things that we know about people and what they need. And we measure that every quarter too. We basically do like engagement based upon a lot of the things that are in our culture code. So things like, are people getting enough rest? Do they feel there's a sense of psychological safety? Are they learning? Are they teaching people? Is there goal support? So just all of those, we measure those every quarter. And it is great to be able to, every quarter when I do that, I go back to the executive team and provide those results. And a big focus point is, how do I put this in the language that's going to be impactful for every person in this room, and tying it back to all of those things that you just said? Retention and health, right, is a big one. Retention, health, engagement, which is highly correlated to performance. So that piece is so important too, that we have like those quantitative pieces and we understand how to connect the quantitative pieces back to the language of each person in the room, right? To make it impactful.
Yeah, it's like you have to act as a translator. It's like mm-hmm. you're literally speaking a different language and helping people yep. understand.
Yep.
But for every leader that's like listening today, if you, there's something you could really, you know, suggest or have them think about, like what comes to mind that would really improve the connection or performance or just, you know, help them activate on something?
Yeah, I think I have to go circle back to the point that I was speaking to earlier, that our leadership starts with our relationship to ourselves. So I would say first thing is like prioritize those things that are going to help you be more grounded and connected, even if it is like the pause and breathe that I was mentioning earlier. I'm really passionate about our relationship to ourselves is like one of the most important leadership responsibilities of our lives. And that is true in every single context, including being a leader to other people. So I think just having that grounding as you're meeting people. And then I think my point earlier too about don't forget to have fun with things. I think that there are a lot of simple things that we can do to really foster connection. I'm thinking about how I host this, it's bookend for the week where it's called a water cooler conversation, but it's virtual because we're a global company. So it's every Monday and every Friday, and it's 15 minutes where everybody can hop on the line and we can have a water cooler conversation. And this is kind of silly, but really impactful. We had like Friday was International Cat Day, so everybody brought their animals to the call.
Aww.
Yeah, and I got so much feedback about how that was just so fun for everybody to yeah. be able to introduce their animals and talk about it a little bit. So I think I would just say, don't forget to have fun as you're leading too. And sometimes the simplest things can be pretty impactful for people.
I love it. And I'm just like carrying forward your message. Just try it, you know, like yeah. just try something that like, what are little ways you can have fun and just like do something.
Yeah.
Like in action, it's just, you're not going to, it's just easier. Just give it a go. And if it doesn't work, then try something okay. else.
Experiment.
Experiment. Well, Amy, this has been such a fun conversation and I just appreciate you taking time and, you know, just thanks for your incredible work and for sharing it with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was great to be here with you.